And we're holding on Memtes Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. We learned in the previous Mishnah about various opinions, what makes a mamzer. Particularly, we had certain cases which are more relevant to our Masechta. We said that one of them was a person marries the woman he did chalitza with, and another one is he marries one of her relatives. And the third one was, but he remarries his wife after he divorced her, and then she married somebody else. So in all those three cases, Rabbi Akiva had said, child is a mamzer, and the Chachamim had said that not. So now, our Mishnah continues on that topic. The Mishnah says, Ezehu mamzer, what is the definition of a mamzer? Where? The Torah tells us a mamzer is not allowed to marry the Kal Hashem in the congregation of Hashem, meaning that a mamzer is not allowed to marry a mamzer, either male or female, is not allowed to marry into the group of Jews who are allowed to freely intermarry with each other. Namely, he can't marry a Kohen, Levi, or Yisrael, because all of those can freely intermarry, but he is allowed, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, he can marry another mamzer or mamzeres, of course, he or she can also marry a ger or gyeres, and various other groups that it says over there in the Mishnah. So what is the definition of a mamzer? So the first definition is kol she'er baser shu b'lo yavri. Anything where there's an iser involving a relative, where there's an iser, even if it's not kares, to have relation with them. So for example, Rashi gives us an example, which is actually, the Gemara says, where Rav Akiva is going to learn this from. Namely, we learned earlier in the Masechta, and we're going to discuss here in the Gemara, that if a man has relations with a woman outside of marriage, and we always call that anusa, because even though it could be consensual as well, the default assumption is that she wouldn't go along with that, and therefore it's going to be onus. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's an isur lav for his son to later on marry this woman. It's called anusas oviv. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a lav involved. Now, so there you have it. It involves a relative because it's his father. It's a woman that his father had relations with. And there's a lav. So Rabbi Akiva would hold that if the son did that, so if the father had relations with this woman outside of marriage, and then later on the son married this woman, then any child produced from that would be a mamzer. Another example, Rashi says, is let's say we learned in the previous Mishnah, if he marries his chalutza. So now we said that there's a lav involved of lo yivne, because he didn't build her up by doing yibum, therefore he can't do that in the future. But so there's a lav, it involves relationship, because it was his brother's wife. And if he were to marry her, if he were to have relations with her, then again Rabbi Akiva would say that creates a mamzer. So divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's what Rabbi Akiva says. So it doesn't have to involve kares, it just has to involve that there's a relative and that there's a lav. Now, when we say a relative, we mean as opposed to, for example, you have things in the Torah where there's a lav for a couple to get to have relations that doesn't involve relationships. For example, the Maxi Grushose, for example, there's no blood relation over there. And still, we're saying that Rabbi Akiva, so here in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva doesn't seem to be saying that, so we'll see about that in the Gemara. And then you have ones that don't involve relationships at all. Rashi gives another example, let's say, that a Nesina, a descendant of the Givonim, who quasi-converted, is not allowed to marry a Bun, is not allowed to marry a Ben Yisrael, or vice versa. Anyway. So Rabbi Akiva would say that where there's a relationship, and there's a lav, then there's mamzeres. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Shimon HaTimni Yomer, Yikol Shachayov Molo Kores Bidei Shamayim. Shimon HaTimni says, no, it's not enough for there to be a lav, there has to be kores involved. So according to him, the various examples that we just gave would not produce mamzerim because none of them involve kores. You would have only the close relations involve kares, and Eishes Ish involves kares. So according to him, that would be what produces the mamzer. And the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, v'halacha kedvarav, the halacha is like what he says. Now, Tosfos points out that not always when a Mishnah says the halacha is like somebody, or Braisa says the halacha is like somebody, is that in fact the last word on the subject. because that may only be the opinion of the Tana of the Mishnah, and there could well be other Tanoim who disagree. Unlike when the Gemara tells us the halacha is like Pliny, then that means that's it's a given that it's that way because the Gemara was the Gemara was compiled and redacted by Ravina and Ravashi, and it went through a long editing process that where it was agreed to by all the Chachamim of those times. So therefore, when the Gemara says the halacha is like something, then that's it. But when a Mishnah does, not necessarily. However, here Tosfos says, in fact, the halacha is in fact like Shimon HaTzimin. So only when there's Issur Kores involved is there a mamzer. Then the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yeshua and Mekol Shachayav and other Misas Beistin. Rabbi Yeshua says, not enough for there to be Kores, there has to be Misas Beistin. So for example, according to him, most relatives wouldn't, or not most, but many relatives wouldn't create a mamzer either. A man has relations with a sister, or his, for example, a sister is only an Issur Kores, there's no Misas Beistin, therefore, according to him, there would be no mamzeres for it. Only, for example, so there are relatives where there is Misas Beistin, for example, his daughter, his granddaughter, his mother, and so forth, so, and Eishas Ish. So all of those, according to him, would produce a mamzer. So the Gemara says, Omer of Shimon ben Azai, Matzasi Megillah, usually we don't call him Reb Shimon ben Azai, by the way, because he didn't get smicha. And in fact, over here, maybe not necessarily is it supposed to say Rebbe, maybe it's just supposed to say Shimon ben Azai. Anyway, he says, Matzasi Megillas Yuchsin v'Yerushalayim, I found a scroll of Yuchsin, a scroll of genealogy in Yerushalayim. They used to keep, they had to keep records of people's yuchsin in order to know who's allowed to marry who, and in the case of Kohenim, who's allowed to serve in the Vesnikdash, etc. So I found such a scroll, he says, because of one, it says in it, Ish Pliny, Mamzer Me'eshes Ish, that Pliny, and it named that person in the scroll, is a Mamzer from an Eshes Ish, meaning that his mother was married to somebody else and was Mizanah with somebody not her husband. Lakayim and Ben Azai points out, Lakayim, Divrei Rabbi Yeshua, that the statement and that scroll supports what Rabbi Yeshua says, because the fact that it said Me'eshes Ish, it's not just telling us what the circumstances were. The point is that we see from that that only because it was from an Eshes Ish, which is an example of something where there's Misas Beistin, only because of that was the child of Mamzer. In other words, if not for that, it would have just said Ish Kloini Mamzer. In fact, Tosfos says, actually, when it said Eishes Ish, it's not just because it so happened to be that way. It's more also, it's the whoever wrote this Megillas Yuchsin, and we're saying evidently it wasn't just some yukel on the street. It must have been written under the approval of the Chachamim of that time, because they would be the ones to have such things recorded. Anyway, the point is, Tosfos says, in a way, an Eishes Ish, you would think, is less serious than the other Misas Beistin. After all, first of all, it's only Chenek. Most other Misas Beistin involving Arayas usually are Skila or Strefa, which are much more severe. Second of all, also, unlike most of the other ones, an Eishes Ish has a Heter, because if her husband dies or divorces her, then she's allowed to remarry. So in that sense, Eishes Ish is less serious than the other Misas Beistin. And nevertheless, the scroll said that even that is enough to make a child a mamzer, showing, therefore, that it upholds whoever wrote that scroll held, like Rabbi Yeshua, that only Mrs. Beistin produced a mamzer. There is the obvious possibility that the Ish Pliny mamzer Me'eshes Ish that we're referring to is a certain infamous character in Jewish history who's known to have been a mamzer from Me'eshes Ish, namely Issur Ish. And there is, I saw somebody who actually claims that and says that therefore the Chachamim. He says that therefore maybe the Chachamim wrote it in this way in order not to offend the Goyim. Could be, or it could be we're just talking about some other random person. Whatever the case. So those are the three opinions. So again, according to Rabbi Akiva Chai Ve'Lavin, according to Shimon HaTimni, Kores, and according to Rabbi Yeshua, Mrs. Basin. Continues the Mishnah. Ishto Shemesa, if a person's wife, if a man's wife dies, Mutter V'Achosa, then he's allowed to marry her sister. Gersha Umesa, and also if he divorces his wife and later on his ex dies, also Mutter V'Achosa, then he's also allowed to marry her sister, because the Torah only answers her sister while she's alive. Also, Nisus La'achar Umesa, even if this ex-wife marries somebody else, and then dies. Also, Mutter Bachoisa, the first husband, is allowed to marry her sister. Because as long as, the point is she's dead, it doesn't matter what happened in between, whether he divorced her, whether she remarried somebody else or not. Similarly, continues the Mishnah, Yevimto Shemesa, if his Yevama died, Mutter Bachoisa, that he's allowed to marry her sister. We learned earlier in the previous parak and in our parak about the problem of Achos Zikukosai, that when you have a woman who is tied to you with Zika, then they're not allowed to marry her sister. We said the majority opinion is that that's Derabanan. But again, once the Yevama is dead, you're allowed to marry her sister. Similarly, Cholatzla Umesa, similarly if you did Chalitza with the Yevama, where there also you can't marry the sister as long as the Yevama is alive, because that's Achos Chalutzosai, but still, Umesa, if then the Yevama dies, Mutter Bachoisa, then you're allowed to marry her sister. And Nisus La'achar Umesa, if now, after the Chalitza, the Yevama went and married somebody else, and then she died, Mutter Bachoisa, then again also the Yevama is allowed to marry her sister. Because again, the whole problem was that as long as the Yevama was alive, then she's the sister is a chos zikukosai, or later on a chos chalutzosai, and now that the Yevama is dead, then she's out of the picture, and then there's no problem. So the Gemara starts off. My time is at Rabbi Akiva. Why does Rabbi Akiva say that chayvei lavin, that our relatives produce a mamzer? So like this, yichtiv lo yikach ishas eishas oviv. The pasuk says in Parshas Kisetze, a man should not marry the wife of his father, v'lo yigala knaf oviv, and he should not uncover the skirt of his father. So meaning, what we mean is the word, the skirt over here refers to a woman that his father had relations with. Konaf shara oviv lo yigala, the skirt, literally a konaf means like the edge of a garment, like kantim zem l'deresem, so the garment that his father saw, meaning that his father had relations with this woman, we actually sometimes find there are places, I think the Rashash points out, there are places in Tanakh where we use the word seeing to refer to having relations. So it means a woman with whom his father had relations, lo yigala, then he, the son, is not allowed to uncover, meaning he's not allowed to have relations with this woman. Now, the Savalak Rabbi Yehuda. Now, in that, Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Akiva's Talmud, so it's the other way around, really. Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Akiva, but because the opinion that we're talking about not marrying such a woman is known under Rabbi Yehuda's name, so we talk about it in terms of Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on that. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that the pasuk is talking about a woman whom his father raped or otherwise had relations with outside of marriage. So the Torah is telling us, according to Rabbi Yehuda and according to Rabbi Akiva, that the son is not allowed to later marry this woman. Now that is an example of chayvei lavin, because the pasuk is saying lo yikach v'lo yigala. The Samichle, then shortly after that, two psukim after that, it says, Lo Yovim Mamzer V'Kal Hashem, that a Mamzer shouldn't enter the congregation of Hashem, meaning that he's not allowed to freely marry among the Jewish people. So therefore, in other words, we have the Smuchin, Alma, so therefore we see, Mehani having Mamzer. So anything, so we make a Binyan Ab, anything that is like Knaf Ovid, anything that is like Anusas Ovid, namely, where there's a lot, where there's relatives involved, in this case his father, and there's a lot involved, then the child from it would be a mamzer. You have actually, there is a pasuk in between, lo yovei p'tzua daka, or kurus shofcha b'kal Hashem, but since a p'tzua daka and kurus shofcha don't have any children, because their organs have been damaged, so they're not able to, then therefore we can sort of ignore that for this purpose, and say that we have a smuchim between the pasuk lo yikach, lo yigala, and the pasuk lo yovei mamzer. So that's how Rabbi Akiva gets his opinion, that there needs to be she'er boser, there needs to be a blood relation, namely in this case, the father and the son, as well as a lav, namely because the father was ma'anis, this woman, therefore she's also to the son, according to the Yehuda. And therefore he makes a binyan out from that, that anything else that's similar to that produces a matzah. Next. What about the Gemara says Ula Reb Simoi? Now, what about Reb Simoi's opinion, where he understands Reb Akiva to be not just talking about where there's blood relatives and a lav involved? Reb Simoi understands Reb Akiva to be saying anytime there's a lav involved, then there's a mamzer. Rashi refers to, there are Gemaras in some places, one of them being in Ksubas, which we'll get to in a few months. That's a shame. That the only exception that Rabbi Akiva says, where there's a lav and there's no mamzer, is if a Kohen Gadol marries an almona. But according to him, according to him, any other chayve lavin, for example, again, the Machs of Lushosai, a Nesina marrying the Yisrael, another example Rashi says is an Amorni Ger who marries a Bas Yisrael. So all of those, Rabbi Akiva would say, according to Rabbi Simoi, that those in fact produce Ramzeim, not even though there's no blood relations involved. So according to Rabbi Simoi, Demar Beshar Chayve Lavin, the Lav Desher, so he includes, according to Rabbi Akiva, other Chayve Lavin, even when there's no even though there's no blood relation involved. And what about also Ula Rav Yeshevav? What about according to Rav Yeshevav, who the Marba Afilo Chayve Eser, where he understands Rav Akiva to go even beyond that, to say that even if there that even if there's only an Eser involved, then the child would be a mamzer. So what's an example of an Eser? The Torah tells us that a Mitzri or an Adoni Ger is not allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people until the third generation. Meaning that if a person from Mitzrayim becomes a Ger, then he and his children are not allowed to freely marry into the Jewish people. But they can marry Giyotis, they can marry Mamzeris, etc. If they marry Giyotis, then the third generation is already freely allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. So Rabbi Yeshevav holds that that's how Rabbi, now, in that case of Mitzri or Adomi, there's an implicit essay about them not marrying in the first two generations. The Torah never says in so many words that a first or second generation Mitzri or Adomi should not marry into the Jewish people. But the Pasuk says that the third generation can, implying that the first two generations can't. So that's an example of a lava bomi call essay. You have the Torah tells us an essay and we and we can deduce from it a lois eser. So according to Rabbi Yeshevav, even in that case, Rabbi Akiva would hold that the children are mamzei. In fact, in the Gemara in Ksuvos, which we'll get to in a few months, Bez Hashem, he says we should complain about Rabbi Akiva's opinion. How could he say such a thing? But the point is, he understands Rabbi Akiva that way. So according to them, so how do they learn that from this loyukach ishas eshes aviv? The answer is naftaluhumi viloi. The answer is because they learn it from the fact that it doesn't say lo yigala, it says vilo yigala, and therefore, so we can learn from that extra things, the other chayve lavin according to Rabbi Simoi, or even the chayve eser according to Rabbi Yeshiva. Okay, so all of that is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Now, the Shimon HaTimni, now what about Shimon HaTimni, who says that it's not, that an Isser lav does not produce a mamzer, only an Isser kares? So how does he get that? So he says, so now, Shimon HaTimni holds like the Chachamim who understand that pasuk of Layikach Ishas Aviv, Layigala Knaf Aviv, they understand that pasuk different. Not like Rabbi Yehuda. They say, Da'amri, the Shemeras Shoyavim Shal Aviv Akasim Medavim. They say the pasuk is referring to his father's Shemeras Yavim. So, his father had a brother who died without children. The woman is waiting for Yibum or Chalitza with the father. So now, the Pasuk is telling us that in between, the son should not go and marry this woman. And if he did, it would be an Isser D'Oraisa. Not because she's a Yivama, but because she's his father's brother's wife, which is an Erva Min HaTorah, and there's no mitzvah over here. Where there's a mitzvah, then the mitzvah overrides that, but there's no mitzvah for a son, there's no mitzvah for a nephew to do Yibum with his aunt, and in fact his aunt, this is his aunt by marriage, is also to him Min HaTorah, so therefore that would be an example of Chayve Krisis. So they have Dehavi L'Chayve Krisis. So this is an example of Chayve Krisis. So according to Shimon HaTimni, he holds like the Chachamim, the Pasuk is not talking about an Isur Lav of Anusas Aviv. The Pasuk is talking about an Isur Kores of his father's brother's wife. The Samech Loi Lo Yavim Mamzer, and again, two Pesukim later it says, Lo Yavim Mamzer, Alma Mechayve Krisis, Havi Mamzer. Therefore we see that a Mamzer comes only from Chayve Krisis. Rav Shamshin Rafal Hirsch, in his commentary on the Pesukim, makes a very interesting point. He says, if you look at the end, if you look at the pasuk before Lo Yikach Ishas Eshes Aviv, the end of the previous parak, it talks about a case where a man, it talks about a case where a man raped a woman, and she's unmarried, so there's no issue, there's no Mrs. Bastin involved. So the Torah tells us he's obligated to marry her, but even if he's not really attracted to her, whatever, as long as she's agreeable, then he's required up yalacha to marry her, and he's never allowed to divorce her. So there you have an example of a marriage where it's a mitzvah for him to do that, where he's required to do it, which is in a way similar to Yibum, where also you have he's required to do Yibum or Chalitza. So therefore, that gives Shimon Atimni a reason to say that in fact, Lo Yikach Ichas Eches Aviv, the Lo Yigala Knaf Aviv, is referring not to Anusas Aviv, like Rabbi Yehuda says, but rather to a case where his father has a mitzvah to marry this woman, namely the mitzvah of Yibum, because that would be just like where his father has a mitzvah to marry this woman because he was Ma'anasar. Then the point would be, so why does the Pasuk have to stress here that the son can't do it? So Rav Hirsch says, because after all, you would think that maybe sometimes we see the son substitutes for the father, the son inherits his father, the son, in particular, you have also by an Omer HaYivriya, you have when a Jewish girl is sold as a maidservant, then there's a mitzvah for either the master himself or his son to do yield with her, to marry her and use them and make her no longer a maidservant, but rather a full wife. So there you see that the son has the rights to do it in place of his father. So you might have thought maybe the same thing is true of Yibum, and therefore the pasuk is stressing to you that no, only the father, who is the brother of her dead husband, is allowed to do Yibum, but his son is not. Anyway, so that's what Shimon HaTimni, that's where he gets that only Chayvei Krisus produce a matzah. Okay, what about Rabbi Yeshua? Now, what about Rabbi Yeshua, who says there's only missus, only when there's missus based in? So he says, think of it like this, he says, Lichter Rachmana lo yigala, lo yigala. If it was just to teach us this din that Rabbi Akiva and Shimon HaTimni are telling us, then it could have just said lo yigala. It could have just said the second half of the pasuk, lo yigala knaf of it, that he shouldn't uncover the skirt that his father had uncovered, meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, anusas aviv, and according to Rabbi Akiva, shemeres yavam, his father. Lo yikach v'lo yigala lamali. Why does the pasuk have to mention lo yikach and lo yigala? Why do we even need the lo yikach at all? Lo yikach ishas eishas aviv. So what do we need that? So Ella lab hachi kamar. So therefore, it's coming to teach us mi lo yikach ad lo yigala having mamzer. On the contrary, Rabbi Yeshua is saying only the half of the pasuk from lo yikach until lo yigala is what we're talking about that we're using for the smuchim that was saying that it has to do with lo yavim mamzer. Namely, so what is it? We're not talking about his father's anusa. We're not talking about his father's shemeres yavam. What we're talking about is where his father actually married this woman, and therefore there's Mrs. Baston. Because for him, she's a married woman, and therefore there's Mrs. Baston involved. So therefore, so now, since the pasuk is saying the extra words, lo yikach eishes eishes aviv, then Rabbi Yeshua says, that's what we're learning from. We're using that as the binyan av, and since an eishes av involves missa, then therefore we're talking about only when there's missa based in. So then in that case, Rashi says in that case, then what is lo yigala knaf aviv is there for? So Rashi says, according to Rabbi Yeshua, we would say, if it's talking about a shemeres yavam, like Shimon HaTimni, like the Chachamim said, then it would mean that if he has relations with that Shemeres Yavim, then he's over on two lav. Number one, because she's his father's wife, and number two, lo yigala knaf aviv. If we say that it's anusas aviv, then the point would be that in fact anusas aviv is also. But the focus, as far as the smuchim, would be on lo yikach ishas ishas aviv, where his father's wife, there's an iser, there's mitzvahs based in involved. Rashi and Tosfos discuss over here that Rashi over here has the girsa only that according to Rabbi Yeshua, it only had to say lo yigala. Why does it say lo yikach at all? Tosfos discusses in the Gemara over here, we have in parenthesis lo yikach, lo yigala lamali, and Tosfos discusses that maybe, in other words, it should have said if you only had lo yikach, then it might only be that we're talking about Eishes Av, where there's only Kores, and therefore we have to have Lo Yikach and Lo Yigala, meaning, in other words, that we're talking about all Mrs. Bastin as well. So the point is that sort of Yeshua is learning it that way. So Hachikama, Mi Lo Yikach Ad Lo Yigala, only the part of the pasuk from Lo Yikach Eishes Aviv until Lo Yigala, only that is what produces the mamzer, namely where there's Mrs. Bastin. There's a father's wife, if the father is dead, there's only Kores. But while the father is alive, then there's Mrs. Bastin because she's a married woman. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yeshua, that's what it means. So therefore, only from there, Milo Yikach, Havlo Yigala, having mamzer, only that part of the positive is what we're saying, produces the mamzer, Tfei Loi having mamzer, but beyond that, not. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Abaya, Hakol Moidiv V'Vo Alamnida V'Ala Sota. Now everybody would agree if a person has relations with a Nida, even though there's an Issur Kores, or with a Sota, we mean a married woman who's a married woman who's Mizana, we don't know that she was Mizana. She was Nistara, she's now also to her husband until she drinks the Mei Sota. So even though that's an Issur Lav, so Rabbi Akiva would agree, She'ein Avlad Mamzer, that the child in those two cases is not a Mamzer. So even though, for example, Rabbi Akiva had said that Machzor Grushosai, a child would be a Mamzer, even though it's also a Lav, but over here, as the Gemara is going to explain, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that it's not, that these things are Osir, but they don't produce a Mamzer. Tosfos discusses over here that the various possibilities, whether in fact we mean that Rabbi Akiva agrees, or whether the Hakol Moedim is actually referring to one of the other Chachamim that we're talking about over here in our sugya, and would there be a difference whether we're talking about in the case of a Sota, are we talking about the woman's own husband having relations with her, or are we talking about where he divorced her and now she's marrying somebody else? So we're saying, at least according to Rashi, we mean that even Rabbi Akiva agrees that the child is not a mamzer. Namely, why not? Nida, why from a nida would the child not be a mamzer? Da tafsi ba kiddushin, because after all, kiddushin are tofus in a nida. and according to Rabbi Akiva, the two things go together. Wherever kiddushin are not tofus, and he holds kiddushin are not tofus by chayve lavin, then the child is a mamzer. But by a nida, kiddushin are tofus. Shenema ushini dasa olav, as the pasuk says, who nidus will be on him. The context is the pasuk is talking about a man who has relations with a nida, where he becomes tomei. But the pasuk uses the word ushihi, and there will be. Now the word havaya we often use to mean kiddushin. So even though she's a nida, it says ushihi, implying that kiddushin can still exist at that time. So that means afilu b'shas nidasa tafsi b'kiddushin. Even at the time when she's a nida, kiddushin are still tofus. And therefore, so since kiddushin are tofus, therefore a child from a nida would not be a mamzer. And soita nami, and why by soita would Rabbi Akiva agree that it doesn't create a mamzer? Also nami, the hotapsi about kiddushin. Same thing, because kiddushin are tofus in her. If, for example, a soita, while she's married to her husband, okay, kiddushin are tofus because she's married to her husband. But in other words, if her husband dies or divorces her and she remarries, kiddushin are tofus with her, even after she was mizana. Rashi explains her original kiddushin don't disappear because of her znus. So the kiddushin that were with her husband are still in effect. And if later, so even now her husband has relations with her, he's also to do that, but nevertheless he's still doesn't create a mamzer. And then again, Tosfos discusses that we may also be talking about where he divorced her and then remarried her, and so forth. And also we're saying that, kiddushin are tofus. So therefore, no mamzeres. So the Gemara says, Tani nami hochi. In fact, we learn like that in the Braisa. Hakol moedim v'val amnidu v'al asota v'al shemeres yavam. everybody agrees about a nida or a sota or a shemeres yavam she'ein avlad mamzer, that in all those three cases, the child would not be a mamzer, even according to Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara says, though, but Abaya shemeres yavam. Now Abaya does not necessarily hold that shemeres yavam would belong in this brisa. So shemeres yavam, we mean when she married somebody else without chalitz. So again, even though there's an issur lav, loy siya eshes hames hachutzal ishzer, nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva takes the view that kiddushin are tofes in her because, again, the Torah phrases the lav in terms of avaya. The expression is loy siya eshes hames, implying that even though havaya, namely kiddushin, is possible with her, nevertheless, she has an issur to do that until she does chalitza or yikul. So therefore, kiddushin are tofes, and again, therefore, so that's also included in the braisa, that therefore, according to him, the child is not a mamzer. However, the Gemara says, v'abaya shemeres yavam misapkele ikirabi kishmul. Abaya says that maybe shemeres yavam does not belong in this braisa, because we have later on in the Masechta, a machlokas rav and shmul, whether in fact, if a yavama who hasn't had yivam or chalitza, if she goes and marries somebody else, yavama lashuk, is kiddushin tofes? There's two ways of understanding it. Rav says that no. Rav says that the words loisia mean just the opposite. It doesn't mean that she's not allowed to do kiddushin. In other words, kiddushin would be tofes, but she's not allowed to do it. Rav learns loisia means it's impossible to do kiddushin with the eishes hames hachutza to somebody from outside her dead husband's brothers. So according to him, kiddushin are not tofes with a yavama. So if we learn like Rav, then in fact, then Rav Akiva's usual rule would apply. Kiddushin aren't tofes, therefore the child would be a mamzer. And then we have, on the other hand, Shmuel's opinion in that Gemara, who says that he's not sure whether that's what it means, or whether maybe it means that she is able to do kiddushin, but she's also to. So in other words, Rav says definitively that it means that kiddushin are not tofes. Shmuel says we're not sure. So Abaya says, on that basis, we can't necessarily say in this braisa, shemeres yavam, because it's not a given that a shemeres yavam, in fact, that there is going to be, and it's not a given that kiddushin are tofus, and it's only an isulab, such that Rabbi Akiva would say that it's not mamzerim, maybe it's like Rav, and possibly Shmuel, who say that kiddushin are not tofus with her. Next, the Mishnah had said, Amr of Shimon Azay. Well, Lord, Shimon Ben Azay had said that I found a Megillas Yuchsin in Yerushalayim, and it said in it that...
What's Rabbi Akiva's position in a Suffolk Mamzer?
Suffolk Mamzer, everybody would agree. Well, so we had something before in the Masechta about Suffolk Mamzer, where we said there was an opinion that a Suffolk is like a Vadai, and therefore that he's actually allowed to marry a Mamzeris. The majority opinion, we said, was not like that. A Suffolk Mamzer, in fact, so we had on Daf Lamed Zayin, we had Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and we had the Chachamim, and we had two different ways of understanding Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion, and two different ways of understanding the Chachamim's opinion. We ended up saying the halacha is that a Vaday Mamzer is that a Suffolk Mamzer is not allowed, a Suffolk Mamzer has a problem. They can't marry a Vadei Mamzer because they themselves may not be a Mamzer. They may be a Kosher Yid, and a Kosher Yid can't marry a Mamzer. They can't marry a Kosher Yid for the same reason, because they might be a Mamzer. So the only alternative is for them to marry a Ger or Geirus.
And that's also Rabbi Akiva's opinion?
So Rabbi Akiva, Pashas, just wouldn't disagree with that. There's no particular reason he would. Rabbi Akiva was saying has a broader definition of what creates a mamzer. But once the person is a mamzer, then Pashas, he would hold like that. That only a vade mamzer is allowed to marry a mamzer. That's a suffolk mamzer is not. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we explicitly find him saying one way or the other. But Pashas, that's how it would be.
Would imply it from the Vadai Mamzer.
Well, so we know that a Vadai Mamzer can marry a Mamzer. He just has a broader definition of what creates a Vadai Mamzer. But yeah, if it's a Suffolk Mamzer, according to his definition, then yeah, presumably you'd have the same thing, that a Suffolk can't marry a Vadai. Okay, so the Mishnah said, Amr Rav Shimon Ben Azay Chulo, Rav Shimon Ben Azay said, I found a Megillas Yuchsin in Yerushalayim that mentioned a certain person and said he was a mamzer from Eishes Ish, which supports what Rabbi Yeshua says, that only when there's mitzvah spaces. So the Gemara says, Tani, we learn in a Braisa with more details about that. Shimon ben Azar Omer, Matsasim Megillas Yuchsin in Yerushalayim. I found him Megillas Yuchsin in Yerushalayim. Because of what? And it said in it actually not just that, but a couple of other things as well. First of all, Ish Poini Mamzer Me'eshes Ish. Number one, it said what we quoted in the Mishnah, that Poini is a Mamzer from an Eishes Ish. Number two, it said two other things as well. Because of what? Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov Kavvena. The Mishnah, meaning the teachings of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, is small but pure. A kav is a small measurement. So in other words, relatively speaking, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is not mentioned that often in Mishnayos or Braises. But of the places where he is mentioned, in those few places, then it's nucky, it's clean, because the halacha is always like it. Hagosma Rav Ranchbrook has a long discussion over here whether in fact that rule is limited to Mishnayos or whether it applies to Braises as well. So he says actually it seems there may be different sugyas in the Gemara that disagree on that point, because there are some sugyas that imply that that rule applies to Braises as well, and there are others that seem to imply that it applies only to Mishnayos. There's a vort that says, I don't remember the source of it, that the word kav itself is gematria 102, because there's 102 places where Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion is mentioned. With that said, by the way, it seems there may have been two Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakovs. So the one we're talking about over here, Papashlus, is the first one who lived at the time of the Churban. Anyway, so it also said this in the scroll that the halacha that his teachings are few, but the halacha is like them. And number three, a third thing it said in the scroll, because of Menashe Horeges Yeshaya. The third thing it said in the scroll is that King Menashe, during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, killed the Navi Yeshaya. Now, what are these three things doing together in the scroll? So, Bepashtus, the scroll was just meant to collect together different little tidbits of information that otherwise might be forgotten. But there are Mephoshim who talk about some possible links between one thing and another. One thing is, we had something that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said earlier in that sugya about Vadei Mamzer and Safek Mamzer. He also mentions over there that a Mamzer can be even from Chayve Krisus. So now we're saying this Megillas Yuchsin, on the other hand, is implying that a Mamzer is only from Mrs. Bastin. So therefore it's stressing, nevertheless, don't think that the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in the various things that he says. The halacha is like him in that particular braisa that he says over there, where he says over there that a person shouldn't go and marry women in different places, because then you're going to end up with mamzerim in the world, because people aren't going to know who their relatives are and aren't. And then as far as Menashe, so a different explanation is that this Megillas Yuchsin is telling us about the purity of the Jewish people, to be careful, for example, to not intermarry with this Mamzer, and Menashe was trying to break down that purity of the Jewish people and introduce Avodah Zarah and other Averis. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Menashe had relations with his sister, so therefore in that sense there might be a connection there. Anyway, so now the Gemara is going to expand on that last point, that we're saying that Menashe killed Yeshaya. So Omar Rava Maidan Dine Vakatle. It's not that Menashe just one day sent his soldiers and they killed Yeshaya. Menashe actually judged Yeshaya and claimed on the basis of his judgment that he has a right to kill him. Namely, Omale, so he says to Yeshaya, and we should realize, by the way, not that it's relevant to our Gemara over here particularly, but Yeshaya was actually Menashe's grandfather. You have the Gemara in Brachas, where Chizkiah was very sick, which we're going to discuss that point soon in the Gemara, and the Navi comes and tells him, you're going to die in this world and the next world because you didn't get married, and you haven't done Kruavu, and Chizkiah says, but I know my children are going to be Rishoyim, and Yeshaya tells him, it's none of your business, you do what Hashem tells you, and Hashem will do what he wants, so he marries Yeshaya's daughter, and Menashe was their son. So Menashe is the son of the daughter of Yeshaya. Anyway, so he says to Yeshaya, you Nevuas contradict the Torah. Moshe Rab Ha'oma Kilo Yirani Ha'odim Bachoi, your master Moshe, who's the master of all the Nevi'im, he said in the Torah, no man can see Hashem and live. Yet in one of your Nevuas, you say, I saw Hashem sitting on a high and lofty throne. So you're contradicting the Torah. Meaning, in other words, in effect, Menashe is telling Yeshaya, you're a Navi Sheker. Another example, which, by the way, Tosfos points out, there is a pasuk also in the Torah that says "Vayiru es Elokei Yisrael." So Ma'ariv Shas says, okay, the Gemara is not bringing that pasuk because. So the Gemara is going to say, soon. Obviously, there are answers to all these challenges. We know that Yeshaya is not a Rabbi Sheker, but the point is, Ma'ariv Shas says that pasuk. Menashe didn't even think of quoting that pasuk because he knew that fine, that could be talking about that they saw, so to speak, the back of Hashem, like Veroisa es Achorai. But when Menashe says Veroisi es Hashem Yosheva Kisei Rom Menisa, that implies that, so to speak, he saw Hashem's front. So you're contradicting Moshe. And he continues, Moshe Rab Ho'oma Mika Hashem Alekenu B'chol Kareinu Eilav. Your master Moshe said, who is like Hashem our God whenever we call to him, implying that Hashem is always accessible. Va'ata Marta Dushra Hashem Mi'imatzei. You and your Nevuah say, seek Hashem when he can be found, implying that Hashem is not always accessible. Another one, Moshe Rab Ho'oma Es Mispa Yamecha Amalei. Your master Moshe said, in the Torah that Hashem promises, I will fill up the years of your life. In other words, a person is going to live, that if people keep Torah and mitzvahs, they'll live the predestined amount that Hashem predetermined how long they're going to live, but no longer than that. So when a person is born, we know tzaddik or rasha lo kama. Hashem doesn't determine at the time whether he's going to be a tzaddik or a rasha, but Hashem determines in advance everything else that's going to be with this person. So let's say Hashem decides when the person is born that he's going to live 80 years. So what might happen is, the Torah is implying, if the person does Averis, then they may die younger than that. But if they don't, if they do Torah and mitzvahs, they'll live that full allotted lifespan of 80, but they're not going to go beyond that. So, va'atamauta, but you, says Menashe to Yeshaya, you and your Nevuah, you said to my father Chizkiah, v'hoisafti al yamecha chamesha seshana, that Hashem says, I'm going to add 15 years to your life, implying, in other words, that Chizkiah was originally predestined to live only a certain amount, and you're telling him that he's going to have 15 years more. So in those three ways, Menashe is saying to Yeshaya, you are evidently a false Navi because you're contradicting the Torah. Now, obviously, Menashe himself is not exactly a staunch defender of the Torah. Really, he's introducing Avodah Zarah and all kinds of other Averis into the country, but he wanted to use these as an excuse in order to harass Yeshaya and kill him. An interesting point that they make in one of the art school books of Tanakh, I think on Divrei Hayamim, is they say apparently what it was is Menashe was bothered by any psukim that imply that Hashem is actually involved on a personal level with the world. So he's fine, for example, with the Torah saying that Moshe says no man can see me and live, which means, in other words, like Hashem is not involved with the world at all. But to hear Yeshaya say that I saw Hashem, implying that a nivra can have a relationship with the Bode, that Menashe didn't like. And the same thing the other two. Moshe is saying that the second one, B'chol Kareinu Eilav, is a little hard to understand about that. On the contrary, Moshe is saying that Hashem is always accessible. So I don't know about that one. I don't remember what they say about that. And the third one also, that Moshe is saying that Hashem doesn't get involved in adjusting the amount of a person's lifespan for longer, and you, Yeshaya, are saying that Hashem gets involved personally and adjusts it. So there's the idea that Menashe is trying to, like, make Hashem removed from the world. There's a sicha from Tavshin Chav Ches, where the Rebbe once talked about this Gemara, and says that apparently what it was is that now the Gemara is going to explain soon, of course, that Yeshaya is not contradicting Moshe. But the idea would be that first of all, the Gemara is going to say soon that Moshe saw Be'espaklari Amira. He saw Elokus much more clearly than any of the Nevi'im after him. But the bottom line is that Rebbe explains over there in a sicha at some length that Moshe was speaking in general from the point of view of the Jewish people collectively, whereas Yeshaya, being on a lower level, being one of the later Nevi'im, so he's not able to achieve that level, so therefore he's seeing it on an individual level, and therefore from the individual level, things look somewhat different. So, Omer Yeshaya, says to himself, Yadina Vedal and Makabal Mada Emele. Listen, I know that Menashe is not going to accept. Of course, I have perfectly good explanations, which the Gemara is going to explain soon, about why my Nevuahs don't contradict Moshe Rabbeinu's. But I know that he's not going to accept it, because I know he's only looking for excuses. So he's just out to kill me. The E Amalei, but if I tell him the answers, and he doesn't accept them, Eshavi Amazed, then I will thereby be making him amazed. In other words, because then he's going to know that what he's doing is wrong to kill me, and he's still going to do it anyway. So that would make his Aveda much worse. So Yeshaya figures, better, let me evade the questions. Let me pretend like I don't know the answers. And that way, let Menashe think to himself that he's actually legitimately, that he has a legitimate reason to kill me for being a false nub. In that sikha, the Rebbe says, you see from that, the Avas Yisrael that Yeshaya has, this is Menashe, is out to kill him, and still he's trying to mitigate, you know, he's still trying to mitigate Menashe's, the seriousness of what Menashe is going to do by making it look, at least on the surface, let it look like Menashe has a legitimate reason. Anyway, so, Omar Shem, so Yeshaya pronounced the name of Hashem, with which you can do Nisim, Ivra Ba'arza, and he was swallowed up into a palm tree. Not a palm tree, into a cedar tree. So now he's safe from them because he's inside the tree. But they discovered that he was inside the tree. There's a different source. There's a different medrash or Yerushalmi or something that says that they noticed that his tzitzis was sticking out of the tree. So they realized that he's inside it. So asyula arzav and asura. So they took that cedar tree and they started sawing through it to get him out. When the saw reached the part of the tree where Menashe's mouth was, not nafshe, that he passed away. So that's how they killed him. And why did he get his punishment in that way? Why was he killed through his mouth? Mishum da'omar, because at the beginning of his nevuah, many years earlier, he had said, in his first nevuah, which is in the Torah of Parshas Yisro, he says, where after he saw us, Hashem Rom Menisa, he sees Hashem Yoshev Akisei Rom Menisa, he says, woe to me, he says, because I have unclean lips and I live among a people who have unclean lips. So in other words, he spoke in a derogatory way about the lips of the Jewish people, claiming that their lips are unclean. So because of that, many years later now, he was punished by having the saw cut him by his mouth. And that's how he was killed. By the way, you have in the psukim over there, the Ritva points out that actually in the psukim over there, you have that right away, a malach came with a coal, with a burning coal, and put it on his lips and told him, v'sor avoncha, v'chatos chotechuper. So in that case, his aveda was cleaned up at that point. Why does he need this consequence many years later? So there's a few different explanations. One of them being that only suspended his punishment for a period of time, but now at the end of his life, it had to be cleaned up so that he would be able to freely go into Gan Eden. But we see from that, in general, we see the seriousness. We see how badly Hashem takes it when a leader of the Jewish people, in this case Yeshaya, speaks badly about the Jewish people. Because the fact that if he wants to say about himself that he has unclean lips, fine, but he shouldn't have said that about the Jewish people. To the Jewish people themselves, he can say such things, but to Hashem, a leader of the Yidden always has to defend them to Hashem. So that was the story how Yeshaya was killed. So the Gemara says, "Nikol makom kosher kroya adodi." Okay, the fact is we do have a contradiction between the psukim. Doesn't Menashe have a point? How do we reconcile these psukim that Yeshaya said versus the ones that Moshe said? So the answer is, let's go through that. Well, eres Hashem, when Yeshaya says, "I saw Hashem," but Moshe says in the Torah that Hashem says, "Nobody can see me and live," that means kidatanya. The difference is, like we learn in a Braisa, all the other Nevi'im saw Hashem in an aspaklaria that is not clear. So the word aspaklaria, so some of the Mephoshim say that the word aspaklaria means a glass. So in other words, the metaphor is that the other Malachim are seeing like through an unclear glass, like smoked glass or stained glass or something. You don't see 100% clearly what's on the other side of the glass. Another possibility is that Aspaklaria is a mirror, so therefore the idea would be that the other Nevi'im, like they see a reflection in a mirror, but it's not really a clear reflection. It's also like a mirror is cloudy or something. So that Moshe Rabbeinu nistakel espaklaria meira, whereas only Moshe saw Hashem with a clear espaklaria. So Moshe's experience of Hashem was at a much higher level than the other Nevi'im. So on the level of Moshe, Hashem is telling him the kind of vision of Hashem that you have, nobody can see Hashem and live. But the kind of vision that the other Nevi'im have, the kind of vision that the other Nevi'im have, that they could perceive Hashem on a certain level, and so he could actually be perceiving Hashem sitting on his throne, Kaviyachol. And that's not a contradiction to the Torah because he's anyway seeing it unclearly. It's anyway like he's seeing it through a foggy glass or something. The Rambam describes in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, you have a number of differences between Moshe's Nevuah and the Nevuah of other Nevi'im, and this is one of the differences. Another difference is that Moshe could receive Nevuah any time the other Nevi'im had to prepare themselves. There's a number of differences. And the idea being that it explains in Sfarim that a person receives Nevuah in proportion to how much he purifies himself and makes himself into a Keli for Elokus. Moshe was able to do that to the ultimate level. Therefore, his experience of Hashem was the clearest. The other Nevi'im weren't able to reach that level. Therefore, their experience of Hashem's presence, of their visions of Hashem, were less clear. Anyway, so there's no contradiction in that one. Next, Dirshu Hashem B'Himotzei. What about the contradiction when Menashe is claiming that Hashem says that in the Torah that Hashem is accessible, that Moshe says that Hashem is accessible all the time, and Yeshaya is saying only when Hashem, that there are only certain times when Hashem is accessible. So the answer is Habi Yochid, Habi Tzibur. One's talking about the Yochid, so then he's not always able to reach Hashem with Tefillah. Sometimes Hashem may not be paying attention to it, may not be wanting to listen to his Tefillahs, versus the Tzibur, where Hashem always listens to them. So the most of the Yochid Emas. Okay, so when is the time when a Yochid's tefillahs are more guaranteed to be accepted? Amar of Nachman, what's the behimotzoi? Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Balboa, Elo Asara Yomim, Shabain Rashan Le Yom HaKippurim, during the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, during that time, that is behimotzoi, that's the time when Hashem is more found and more accessible, and even a Yochid's tefillahs go through to Hashem, and Hashem accepts them. Okay, what about the Esmispa Yamecha Amale?
What about Elul?
So Elul is on a different level. Elul is Melach Basada. So then the idea is, like, so to speak, the king comes to us. During the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, the point is that Hashem's palace is open and we're able to come freely to him. During Elul, it's more the point that Hashem comes to us out in the field and makes himself accessible to us. But here the Gemara is focusing more on Aseret Yemei Teshuvah when the dynamic is the other way around. Hashem is back in the palace, so to speak, but the palace gates are open and anybody can come in. Then, Esmispa Yamecha Amalei. Now, what about the third thing where Menashe is claiming that Yeshaya contradicts the Torah, where the Torah says, Esmispa Yamecha Amalei, I will fill up the years of your life, implying that a person is not going to live beyond the amount that Hashem predestined for them, whereas Yeshaya tells Chizkiah that you're going to live an extra 15 years. So the Gemara says Tanoim. There's in fact a machlokes Tanoim, how to understand the pasuk. The Tanya we learn in a braisa. When it says Esmispa Yamecha Amalei, Elu Shnei Doros, this refers to the years of the generations. When a person is born, again, Hashem predetermines that he's going to live X number of years. So therefore, so Hashem determines that at the time. So now, Zocha, if a person was Zocha, Mashlimin Lai, then that amount is filled up. He lives the full number of years that Hashem predetermined. Loi Zocha, and if he wasn't Zocha, Toichsin Lai, then those years are reduced. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So that's Rabbi Akiva is saying that in fact there's no adding years. The maximum that a person can live is the number of years that Hashem predetermined for him. On the other hand, Bacham say no. If the person has schusim, then Hashem will add beyond the years of that he predetermined originally. In other words, the question is Amale, does Amale mean to fill up the original allotted amount, or does it mean to increase? So the Chacham is saying it means to increase. So if Hashem determined to begin with, for example, that the person is going to live to be 80 years old, and he has zchusim, then he can live beyond 80. And Tosfos says, okay, usually we say that the length of a person's life depends on mazel, meaning, in other words, it's something higher than tam badas, but a great zchus can change it. So therefore, generally it doesn't, but nevertheless, a great zchus can change it, and the Chum say that therefore, extra years can be added. So the Gemara continues,
For David HaMelech, he did not extend it, and David had still great zchusim.
That's true, but there was actually the consideration that Hashem had told David that it's also time for your son Shlomo to rule, and your reign can't overlap with his. So there's that consideration also. You also have to remember that actually when David was born, he was actually destined to live only 3 months, only 3 hours. Odomarishin, and the Zohar says the Obis gave him years. So that's a special case. We're not talking about that. When Hashem predetermined how long David was going to live, in fact, it was only going to be a couple hours. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. So the Braisa continues. Omru loylet of Akiva. So the Chachamim said to him, we may as well finish the parak, by the way. So Omru loylet of Akiva. The Chachamim said to him, Akiva, how can you say that years can never be added? Harehu oimavai safti ayamecha chamesha sechana. What about when Yeshaya says to Chizkiah that Hashem is going to add 15 years to your life? So you see that Hashem can add years. Omru lahem. So he answers them, Mishaloi v'sifaloi. Those were actually from his own years. Meaning, he lived in the, when this happened, when he was sick and Yeshaya came to visit him, he was, Chizkiyahu was 39. He ended up living another 15 years. So he died at age 54. So now the idea is, Rav Akiva is saying, to begin with, Hashem had predetermined that he was going to live 54 years. But then he was, because he hadn't gotten married, because of that, Hashem was going to deduct 15 years from his lifetime. Now Yeshaya is telling him Hashem is going to restore you those 15 years and you're going to live them after all. So therefore, it's not really adding something; it's just refilling what he would have lost because of his flaw, because of his aveda of not getting married. But it's not adding. In other words, Rabbi Akiva is saying it's not that Hashem had predetermined that he's going to live 39 years, and now Hashem granted him a bonus of 15. It's rather to begin with, Hashem determined 54 years. He would have lost 15 years because of that. Now he regained that. Tosfos, by the way, refers to a Gemara that we learned in Chagiga a couple of months back, where we have something where sometimes you have a person dies prematurely for reasons over there. It talks about the Malachamovis getting confused, whatever, and then those extra years are taken and given to a deserving Talmid Chacham. So what would Rabbi Akiva say to that? So Tosfos says, Rabbi Akiva would say, in that case, since those years were destined for somebody, maybe not him, but somebody, then Rabbi Akiva would not consider that an addition. In other words, Rabbi Akiva would be fine with the idea that you could have that a person was, let's say, predestined to live 80 years and instead is living, let's say, to 90 because 10 years that were taken away from somebody else are given to him. But those 10 years at least were supposed to belong to somebody's lifetime. Which in that case, the Orach HaNer says, in that case, then why don't we say that over here by Chizkiyahu? Why is Rabbi Akiva forced to say by Chizkiyahu that he would have lost 15 years and now he's only regaining them? And he says, because years like that were destined for somebody else are not going to go for a king. A king's life is something else, and therefore it has to be that the years that he lives as a king are going to be years that were originally destined for him, a king, rather than for somebody else, a commoner. Anyway, Rabbi Akiva continues. Teda, you can prove that to begin with, Chizkiyahu was destined to live those extra 15 years, and it's only he would have lost them because of his aveda. Try to Novi Oymid, because many years earlier, hundreds of years earlier, a Novi had stood there, Umisnabe, and he had given a Nevuah to Yerovam. Earlier in Sefer Melachim, it tells about how Yerovam ben Nevat was how he had set up the Egle Azahav, and one day he's standing over there and bringing Karbonis to them, and a Novi comes and tells him, this is a couple hundred years before Chizkiyahu, he tells him, Hine Bein Nolad LeBeis David, behold, a son is going to be born to the house of David, Yeshiyahu Shmai, his name is going to be Yeshiyahu, and he's going to destroy and then break down all of these mizbechas of Avodah Zarah, including the one that you're sacrificing on now, and he's going to take the bones of the people who worshipped at those, and he's going to burn them on them. Now, Yeshiyahu is a great-grandson of Chizkiyahu. If Chizkiyahu had died childless, then there wouldn't be a Yeshiyahu. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says it has to be to begin with that, and the point is Menashe. The bigger point is Menashe was only 12 when Chizkiyahu died. So therefore, if Chizkiyahu had died at that point without having the 15 years, then Menashe wouldn't have been born. So then Yoshiyahu, who was Menashe's grandson, wouldn't have been born. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says you see that to begin with, Hashem had in his master plan that Yoshiyahu is going to be born, which means that Menashe is going to be born, which means that after all, Chizkiyahu was going to live those extra 15 years. But it's not extra in the sense that it's more than what was destined to him to begin with. To begin with, hundreds of years before Chizkiyahu, Hashem already planned that Chizkiyahu is going to live to be 54, and when he dies, he's going to have a 12-year-old son. Vadaim lo nolad Menashe. So Menashe hadn't been born yet. So you see, therefore, that to begin with, those 15 years were meant to go to, were meant to go to Chizkiyahu. V'Rabbanan, now what are the Rabbanan answer to that? So they say, Miksiv Chizkiyah. Listen, the Pasuk doesn't say that, that this Yoshiyahu is going to be descended from Chizkiyah. L'beis David Chizkiyah. All it says is he's going to come from Beis David. So it could have been from Chizkiyah. It could equally well be from somebody else. Let's say Chizkiyah had died at 39 without children. What would have happened? Somebody else, a brother or a cousin or whatever of his, would have been the next king, and Yoshio would have descended from that person. So therefore, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that Hashem had predetermined that Chizkiyah was going to have those extra 15 years. It could be the Chachamim are saying that in fact those were a bonus that were granted to Chizkiyah. That in fact originally he was destined to live only 39 years, and then because of his tremendous chosim, he was given an extra 15 years. Tosfos points out, by the way, you have to say over here that part of the, according to Rabbi Akiva, that part of the original plan of Hashem was that Menashe is going to be born during those 15 years, because otherwise, after all, if Chizkiyahu had done the right thing and married many years earlier, then presumably he would have had children many years earlier. And conversely, if he ended up dying at 39, then according to Rabbi Akiva, if he hadn't davened to Hashem to spare his life, then he would have died at that point, and he also wouldn't have Menashe. So obviously, therefore, Tosfos says that Hashem determines in advance not only how long a person is going to live, but when a particular person is born. So it was decided that during those 15 years he's going to have Menashe. So Hashem would have made it work out if he would have fathered Menashe before he died or something. So that's that. So we have the Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. So Yeshaya is not contradicting Moshe, because Moshe is saying, so according to Rabbi Akiva, we're saying that Yeshaya was also saying Amale, that I'm just going to refill the 15 years that Chizkiyahu would have lost. And according to the Chachamim, means that Hashem can add extra years, and okay, here Hashem added extra years. The Mishnah said, we had the last part of the Mishnah said that if a man's wife dies, then he's allowed to marry her sister, and it mentioned various sub-details in that, and also if his Yavama died, and he's allowed to marry her sister, and the various details. So Amar Rav Yosef, Kan Shonar Rebbe, Mishnah Shein Etzricha. Really, Rebbe is teaching over here an unnecessary Mishnah, because, so Rashi says, we know from the Pasuk that a man's wife's sister is also to him only while the wife is alive. So therefore, we didn't really need the Mishnah to be telling us that. Tosfos says that no. Sometimes a Mishnah will tell us something that we know from a pasuk. And anyway, after all, the Mishnah is telling us the chiddush that even if he divorced her and later she died, then also that he's allowed to marry her sister. So rather, Tosfos says the Mishnah Shein Etzricha is the part about the Yavama. Once it says that he's allowed to marry his wife's sister after his ex-wife's sister dies, then all the more so by a Yavam. So therefore, according to Tosfos, that's what Rav Yosef means by Mishnah Shein Etzricha. The Ramban has another explanation of it, that we're talking about these details that we said over there, that's about the Yavama, about the wife and about the Yavama, that if he divorced her and if he remarried somebody else, and if he did chalitza to her and then she remarried somebody else, those are details that it didn't need to say, because we would have learned, once we have some of them, we would have understood the other ones ourselves, and therefore it's a Mishnah Shein Etzricha. Hadron Allah HaFayetz.